The following program is produced and distributed by KETR.org. You can help by visiting KETR.org and clicking donate.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Snuffers in Greenville and the Lions Roar Coaches Show for this week. This is the part where you applaud and say thank you for being here. Major's got it. We're going to start with our absentee from last week. First show I think he's missed, but we've got our head volleyball coach, Craig Case, up here coming off a 2-0 weekend, finishing off the conference season. Going out to Eastern New Mexico and Canyon, Texas. Tell us a little bit about that trip.
Well, I saw you a bunch this weekend.
Yes, we'll go over that later.
That surprised a couple of our players when they saw you show up. Yeah, you know, we had a really good trip. From a mileage standpoint alone, you know, it's just like the Western New Mexico Permian Basin trip. It's pretty grueling. And I thought our team went out and played really well in tough situations, and we were able to get a couple of W's, and so that was really good. I was pleased with that, and good momentum going into the conference tournament.
Lions finished the regular season 25-5, 17-3 in conference, the most ever conference wins. Going back and looking at the preseason poll, I don't even remember where we were picked. But third, I believe?
Maybe.
finished second in the conference to Tarleton State. Pretty good team there who we've had some battles with this year.
Yeah.
But looking at the regular season, before we look at the postseason and all those kind of things, did you see 25 wins coming?
No. I was happy when we got our first one, and I'm happy when we got our last one. And, you know, you just never know on those things. There's just so many variables that go into it, especially as a fall sport, because once your team is here, that's what you got. You know, and as you get injuries and you deal with those things, that's all you have. And so you never really know. And knock on wood, we had good luck with health this year. We really only had one significant injury. And then fortunately, you know, some of our other players and some freshmen stepped up in that situation. So I certainly didn't see 25 wins coming. But, you know, if I'm being honest, I don't ever look at a schedule at the beginning of the year and go, I think we're going to be 28-2 this year. You know, you just never know that. And I think that's one of the things that you've got to do if you're going to be successful is you win and then you move on. You can't go, well, we've won 15 matches this year. We're pretty good. And so it's been fun, and it is fun to win, and we've enjoyed that, and we're hoping we got a bunch more wins left in us.
You've won 8 in a row, and I believe that makes it 18 out of the last 19. Does that sound right, Marcus, 18 out of the last 19? He's checking levels. 18 out of the last 19 sounds good. I believe it was a 10-game winning streak, yep. And then the loss to Charlton, and then the last 8 in a row. But almost none of them have been sweeps. Almost none of them have been unentertaining. There's always been a little bit of drama. Does that help coming into this time of year, knowing that you're not a team that's just used to steamrolling people, but you're used to encountering a little bit of adversity and overcoming it here and there?
Well, I think so. You know, we've been in 5-set matches since the first match of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's an experience that goes along with that, and I think we've got that. We had that a lot last year, too. So, you know, we were really good in 5-set matches last year, and I think we're pretty good this year. But there's some value to that. You know, the only thing you got to weigh against that, though, is this time of the year, some of those extra sets of volleyball can start mm-hmm. piling up against you. So, you know, I think we've done some things to help combat that, and I think we're ready to move forward going into the conference tournament, and hopefully we can start sweeping more. But at this point of the year, we'll take a win in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, however many it takes.
I think 6 or 7 would be a different game than we've been playing the rest of the year. The conference tournament coming up this weekend, it starts on Thursday in Stephenville, playing at 2:30 against Permian Basin.
Yep.
In the Wisdom Volleyball Gym, a smaller gym. And one of the things we noticed on the road trip is the difference in between a place like the Fieldhouse or Greyhound Arena, Eastern New Mexico, which is way bigger than you're used to if you've never been there, versus a volleyball-only gym like the Box at WT. Yep. Or Wisdom at Tarleton. Is that which do you prefer coaching in? Which do players prefer playing in? A big arena-style gym or a straight-up box like the Box at WT?
Well, you know, I think it's whatever you train in, that's what you get used to. You know, we struggled at Eastern New Mexico with their gym and our passing. And, you know, we talked a lot about it early, and no matter how much you talk about it, you get you get 30 minutes, really, to practice there and get used to it, and then you got to play ball. So that certainly makes it tough to play. I personally feel like it's easier to go from a big gym like the Fieldhouse to a smaller gym like Wisdom Gym mm-hmm. in Tarleton or the Box or even UT Permian Basin. Now, UT Permian Basin is going to have some advantage because their gym is not exactly the same size, but it's a similar size. And so, you know, we're excited about this, excited about that.
Also, one of the things I noticed looking back at the schedule, we played the season opening tournament at Stephenville the last 2 years, even though not in Wisdom Gym. I think we played more volleyball in Stephenville in the last 2 years than any team but Tarleton. And then there's the very, very, very strong possibility that regionals will also be at Tarleton. How much is the familiarity with playing in a gym that many times over the course of 2 years help an experienced team like ours?
You know, I mean, it helps. You can't go wrong with it. You know, you're familiar with Stephenville. You're familiar with their gym, all those things. We know they're a good team. We know they're a good program. That's why we like going to their tournament. Mm-hmm. And it's just important to us. And it's not on accident that we play there a lot. Now, you know, am I sitting here every year going, well, I hope Tarleton hosts? No, we would like to host
it.
If they don't, then we'd like to go there. If they're not going to host it, then we'd like to go to that gym and at least get the preseason experience there. But there's a lot of value to it. But at the end of the day, you know, you still got to get out. You still got to play. You got to do what you got to do to beat the other team. So,
coming into this tournament, you take on the 7 seed in the tournament in UT Permian Basin, and that 7 seed, I believe they were 9th going into the weekend, and then they upset Angelo and Tarleton. To end the year. So you're running into a very hot team that has taken us to 5 once. And we played them last week, and they didn't look like a team that could beat Angelo and Tarleton. No offense to any Falcons fans watching us for whatever reason. But I believe they were dealing with some injuries. They looked a little out of sync the match I was there for. I mean, is that just a team stepping up, knowing their backs against the wall? Because they were a couple of losses away from not making this tournament at all.
Well, I think a couple of things happened. Number one, you know, it's a long road trip for them, too.
Yeah.
You know, so they played at Texas Women's the night before. They were already suffering from an injury bug. Another starter of theirs got hurt in the TWU match. And so they really were out of sorts against us. We're far more likely to see the team that we went to 5 with at Permian Basin than the team that we beat in 3 at Commerce. And a lot of that has to do with just a neutral site. A lot of it has to do with they've had a couple of weeks now to figure those things out. Hey, and if there's a team in the country that should feel pretty good about themselves right now, it's UTPB. So we've got our work cut out for us, but we were in the same boat last year. We had Western New Mexico was playing some of their best volleyball right at the end of the year, and we drew them in the conference tournament, and you don't have any choice. I mean, you don't get to pick who you play. They tell you who you're going to play, and you got to do what you can do.
Looking at the tournament as a second seed, that means if you win, you play the winner of the 3-6 matches. That matches Angelo and Kingsville. You're looking up and down this. There's just full of teams who have been in the regionals the last 2-3 years. Yeah. Is this conference tournament almost tougher, if not as tough as a regional tournament?
Yeah, it's a good tournament. I mean, our league does well outside of our region, or outside of our league, excuse me. They do well within the region. Yeah, I mean, it's just tough. I mean, our regional tournament's tough because you do have, you know, 1, 2, 3, or 4 of the best teams from one league all playing each other. So I think by nature of the progression, a regional tournament's probably going to be a little bit tougher. But I don't know that it's that much tougher, and it certainly isn't going to be more intense. I mean, the conference tournament is about as intense as we're going to have up until this point. So again, you know, we know what's in front of us, and we know what we got to try to do to move forward.
Another thing that came out this week, and I almost passed this up. This was really cool. The AVCA announced that one of your alumni, Rachel Crowley, is a 30 under 30 high school coach for the entire country, not the state, the entire country. Right?
You're correct.
Okay. Well, yeah. Tell us a little bit about her and this award, and what that means to have your alumni be so successful, not just on the floor, but in their careers as well.
Well, you know, we've had a lot of coaches. We've had a lot of players come through our program. At one point, you know, it's about 3 or 4 years ago, we actually had seven varsity coaches just in my tenure. And this was only, I'd only been here 4 or 5 years at that point.
You weren't the longest tenured coach in program history at that point.
At the time I was not, but apparently I am now. And so, you know, we've had a lot of players. And I think what I take pride in on that is, you know, these are young ladies that have a passion for volleyball and they get done playing and they want to go and they want to share that passion, they want to share that knowledge. And so I always get a big kick out of when our players go on and get into the coaching profession for a couple of reasons. One, you know, it's fun to watch them and it gives us another level of our relationship. So, you know, she and I sat and visited about coaching for a while when she was here on campus. And then the other part that I enjoy, and I may enjoy it more than anything, is the phone call, and they go, yeah, coach, remember that time when you were yelling at me about this or that? And I go, oh, yeah. And they're like, I understand now. And so there's a sort of validation for everything that went on. But, you know, Rachel's done a great job down there at Oak Ridge. She was a top assistant at Woodlands High School for a few years, and she's just done a remarkable job, and I'm really proud of her, and I'm really proud of a bunch of the others. And I was just surprised that she was under 30 still when I saw that. Man,
if she's watching this, you're going to catch some flack for that one, sir. I know this. You got to be smarter than that. She's always 29.
She's always 29.
Looking at the regional rankings going in this tournament, Tarleton and A&M Commerce 1 and 2, followed by a glut of teams from the Rocky Mountain, yep. Colorado Mines, Dixie, Colorado Mesa, Angelo at 6, Regis at 7, Metro at 8, WT at 9, and Lubbock Christian at 10. I mean, what do you expect to happen in the RMAC and the other conferences? Does it matter that much? Do you feel comfortable with the spot that you're in with three more matches and a regional ranking still to come out before the selections on Sunday?
Technically, we got the two from this weekend still, right? I mean,
yeah.
You've got five matches that'll
count against.
You know, I like our position a lot better this year than last year. Last year we needed to win and we needed some help. This year, certainly, you know, if we win a couple of volleyball matches, we're not going to drop six spots five spots and fall out of the regional rankings. So you know, I like where we're at in terms of we have more control over our future. You know, but at the same time, you know, we got a gym full of players that I don't think, you know, they've enjoyed their season, but I don't think they're by any means content with where we're at, knowing that we've got some bigger goals, and we've already lost one of our goals. You know, a goal for this team was to win a conference championship, and we've already lost that opportunity. So now, you know, that just narrows our options.
You lost half of that opportunity. You can
Correct.
Still win the conference tournament championship. You still get
and
a trophy, and that's
it.
Your automatic bid.
That is part of it. So, you know, we know what we got to do, and we know what we've not done, and we're excited about the opportunities we still have in front of us.
So here's our first crowd question of the night.
Oh, crowd question.
We have two that have been submitted. Eddie from Clarksville, is it true that Coach Case finished second in the latest Ironman race?
I did not hear that. That must have been a rampant rumor on the internet. That's crazy. I don't know where that would come from.
Well, apparently it came from your telephone, so that's even better. Like, I thought that you had a pre-planned answer because it says it's from Coach Craig Case on my phone.
Oh, no.
Have you ever done an Ironman or a 5K or any of those type of things? And I don't mean that facetious. Like, what's your kind of – we've been talking about coaching and volleyball, and we do some crazy stuff with you here on the radio. But what do you like to do in your downtime when you're not coaching?
Well,
that's a good question. I like that question.
Definitely not the Ironman competition.
I was going to say. That's pretty insane.
I would spend more time in the hospital after that than I would getting ready for it. You know,
well, we do have good insurance.
I don't know what I – in season, I don't know that you have a whole lot of downtime. I'm pretty boring.
What have you been doing at about 4:30 in the morning, you tell me?
Oh, well, that's just –
Just.
So we practice in the morning, and about mid-season, I started getting really flat during practice, and I didn't enjoy the level of coaching I had. So my brilliant brain decided that the best thing I could do was wake up at 4:30 in the morning and go work out for an hour and a half before every practice. So that by the time I get to practice, I've already been up for 2 hours, and I'm pumped up, and I'm ready to go, and the players think I'm borderline crazy, but that's what I've been doing, and it has taken a toll on me mentally, I think.
I was going to say,
and it hasn't done anything for me physically either.
If you're waking up at 4:30 in the morning to work out, when in the heck are you going to bed?
Well, you know, when you're training for Ironman competitions, your 4:30 workouts are a priority.
Yeah, I mean, have you been getting in your triathlon swim and your 70-mile run?
Well, the pool availability in Commerce is limited, so. And I don't know how to swim, so that...
Is that a serious answer?
That is a serious answer.
Is there not swimming lessons at the YMCA in Minnesota?
There... maybe. I don't know. I haven't lived in Minnesota for quite some time.
But, I mean, that's something... I still can't believe you... That amazes me that you can't swim.
I stump Meg. I cannot believe I stump
Meg. You are from the land of 10,000 lakes, and you haven't swum in one of them.
Hey... That's because 7 months out of the year, it's the land of 10,000 icicles.
Okay.
There's It's okay. Cold. It's glacial water, man.
Okay. I mean, I just can't believe that you've...
I mean, let's get back to the Iron Man. I cannot believe that rumor is out there, and it's not true. I'm just going to put it
right now. I was
going to
say, if I were you, I would put that out there that you are training for the Iron Man. It might help you in other portions of your life. But whoever started this rumor is a very smart...
Vicious lie.
That's a good lie. And then here's another good one. Tank from Quinlan.
Okay.
And this one's a little more on brand and for the work.
I think Tank was at the volleyball match this weekend in WT.
I don't know.
All right.
Tank from Quinlan. No, this Tank wasn't.
Oh, okay.
Why is a volleyball three different colors?
Why is a volleyball? Well, it depends on what level you're at.
Why is an NCAA volleyball three different colors?
I got no idea.
Well, we all use the same one. It's that same blue, yeah. White, and silver one.
It's because they got a contract. I don't
no,
know.
No, they don't, because some of the D1 conferences don't use it.
And that's not even true, because a lot of Division I's will use their school ball. I think a lot of it came from back in the day when branding wasn't as prevalent, and you had a lot of white walls in gyms, mm-hmm. and you were using a white ball, and it just didn't make any sense. And so, you know, the alternative to that is to add a colored ball. And, you know, you've got it spins, so you can see the spins. It helps with officiating, everything.
What helps with officiating?
The multicolor ball.
Something can help with officiating.
Do we have another question?
Randy from Cut and Shoot. Who would win a serving contest between Sarah Carthel and Judy Sackfield?
Oh. Is it
now or in the
jump serving or standing?
I just have... In the prime of their careers.
Ooh.
See, this is when we need the crowd mic set up, too, because if you're listening online, you're not hearing the gold that we're hearing.
I will say this. I'm going to answer this. I'm going to say Sarah, because Sarah is in a position to hit me with a volleyball during practice when I'm not looking. And Judy would have to go out of her way. I would see Judy coming at this point. But Sarah's at practice. So Sarah can take me out of practice with a serve. And that automatically makes her a better server.
Okay, I feel like that's a good answer. And I will say it was cool. So I'd never been to the box at WT until the match on Saturday.
Has Randy?
No. Well, was it Randy was the last one?
Yeah.
Yes, Randy has.
Okay.
I don't think Tank or Eddie have. I still can't believe the Eddie one came from your phone. That one's pretty good.
Eddie's too busy training to go watch college volleyball matches.
So they've got a list of All-Americans and I guess retired jerseys up in the lobby above the concession stand.
Yep.
At the box in WT. And we were on our way out, and somebody was looking, and I was trying to find her on the thing. And our cross-country team was out there in the lobby of the concession stand. And I said, hey, look, that's Sarah. And somebody goes, that's Coach Carthel? So I don't know if that's a compliment or she needs to go whip up on some of the cross-country team for not recognizing her, because that list of accolades and everything is pretty strong. You've got a heck of a volleyball player on your staff, if you didn't know.
Yeah, she's might still be one of the best players in the gym. We'll have to see. We'll get her going again. One of the running jokes we have with our freshmen is we don't say anything when we walk into the lobby now, and we see how long it takes the freshmen. As we're standing there waiting to go into practice, we see how long it takes the freshmen to notice. And there's not a lot of difference. And so she's pretty recognizable in terms of the pictures. It throws some of them because of her maiden name. And so we have to explain that when you get married, you might change your name. And so
I'll say this. Our great videographer, June, he has some – there's some things he catches on to a little faster than others. And so I hey, look, it's Coach Carthel. And he always calls her Coach Sarah. And so he thought he was looking at a picture of Colby before a haircut or something. It was very...
In spandex?
It took a little bit longer than you'd expect for him to put two and two together.
Yeah.
Especially for a graduate student.
Hey, really quick on that match at WT. And I've said it a bunch, and I couldn't have been more proud to be a Lion that day. Our cross-country teams came and cheered us on during that match, and they were loud, and they were disruptive, and they made a difference in us winning that match. And I was really proud to be a part of an athletic department where you've got three teams all in and on it together trying to get the same thing done. And I've told George many times, and I went and visited the team this morning when they got done with practice, that meant a lot to us, and I was really excited to see them. And we saw you this weekend, too.
Yeah, you did. We'll talk about that more in the third segment with the other road trip aficionado. I'll say this. The other credit to the cross-country team, George and Luke aren't here, but so the men finished fifth, the women finished eighth, and we were out there that morning. The first race was at 9:30, I believe, and it was about 45 degrees with probably 20-mile-an-hour winds. Some of us were more prepared for it than others, and then they're out there in running shorts, some of them in the spandex, and they're running in the dust, in the wind for however many miles, and then they still show up and cheer for you guys after that. I mean, that's a long day, and they still had to ride home.
And with some vigor. I mean, they were out. They were into it. They were a problem for WT.
So I'm really also proud of them, and I want to make sure that they get their shout-outs because we do talk more cross-country on the radio than just about any other program in the country. But credit where credit's due. They'll be at regionals a week from Saturday in Denver. You will be at Tarleton this weekend. Good luck to you in the tournament.
Awesome. Thank you.
We'll be right back after a quick break. We have another question.
Oh.
Question from Diane in Kingston, Ontario.
Oh,
I wonder who that could be.
We have a lot of Canadians that listen to this show?
At least one in the audience and one remotely.
Diane.
Who just got waved at on camera. Heard you want to go to the Maple Leaf Diner and eat poutine. Poutine, I can't remember say it right. Explain to the Texans what this is.
The diner or the... Or
both.
The, or
go to both. Delicate?
Well, I didn't know they were a sponsor of the show, first of all.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's NPR, so nobody is, but...
The poutine is it's basically French fries, cheese curd, and gravy.
Oh, I'm in on all three.
And for some reason, it's hard to find in the United States, but the second you cross a border, every fast food restaurant has it, every restaurant has it. It's crazy how that happens. It almost feels like it's illegal to have it in the United States, but it's not.
I mean, so it's fries, cheese, and gravy, and we don't have it.
Correct. Cheese curd.
Are you allowed to make it with just cheese? Because I'm sure I could get somebody in the kitchen.
No. Don't disgrace. Yeah.
You don't want a knockoff version?
Nope.
I feel like it would still be tasty.
It would be all right, but it wouldn't be the same. But it's fantastic. So if you've never had it, you got to go.
And what is this establishment that Diane speaks of?
Well, I don't know because there's a gal I know in the athletic department from Canada, and every time that I try to get her to go over there with me, she dodges me. So. At some point, I'll find it. I'll give you a full review on TripAdvisor.
TripAdvisor. Okay, so now that we've got all of our non-sponsored corporate sponsors that we have to cut from the NPR version of this show, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with our head football coach, Colby Carr.
The program you're enjoying right now was made possible by a group of folks just like you who make contributions to public radio. Support programs just like this one. Visit KETR.org and click donate.
All right, we're back here at Snuffers in Greenville. It's the Lions Roar Coaches Show. We're here with head football coach Colby Carthel and assistant football coach Major Carthel. Who kicked off our segment. Want to do it again? There we go. That's good radio right there. Lions coming off a win at UT Permian Basin, 20-17.
Go Lions!
Okay, that's it. Thank you. 20-17, yes.
Yeah, 20-17 went out there at Ratliff Stadium in Odessa. Night game late in the year. Interesting setup for that game. Talk a little bit about how the game developed in your eyes, because I think it was definitely, it was almost a tale of thirds. Started off hot, cooled down, and then heated up in a different way there at the end.
Right. It was, we came out and took the lead early, I think, with a field goal, and then they came back and answered with a put together a drive on our defense and took a 7-3 lead. And it was kind of back and forth throughout the whole first half, but we weren't really playing up to our standard, weren't real pleased with things at halftime and kind of had to readjust and get after them a little bit and come out with a better focus second half, and we did do that. And defense, I think, held them to maybe one first down in that second half, which was good to see them play up to their potential and did a good job against the run. And we were able to get out of there with a victory. Credit UTPB, played a really good game against us, had a good game plan, and did a nice job. And it was a hard-fought ball game by two teams, and we were just tickled to get the win and get on back home to Commerce.
Looking at one of the people we've talked about a lot over the course of this year, Christoph Martinez. He goes 2-for-4 on field goals. The blocked field goal actually turned out to be one of the more impressive plays of the game. Talk about how that play changed the game for us in a what slightly negative at the time, but turned out to be a positive way.
Right. We'd been pretty lethargic up to that point, and then we see how that happened. They had just scored to take the lead 14-10, and they kicked off a couple times, kept kicking it out of bounds. They were scared of kicking it to Ridge Kincaid for
some reason. I wonder why.
And so we kept making them re-kick it, and so they were kicking off, backed up a little bit, and we returned it down to about the 30 or so, and got down there, kicked a field goal with about a minute left to make it a 14-13 ball game, and we kicked off to them. We had three timeouts, so defense playing well, so we used all three timeouts, made them punt the ball out of their own end zone. We ended up with good field position, and ended up trying a long field goal there before half, about 16 seconds. We didn't manage the clock real well, but long story short, we got a field goal blocked, and it won the game for us. Which doesn't make a lot of sense, but what happened is they did return that blocked field goal. The length of the field should have probably scored a touchdown. They had about eight guys blocking, and we had our little bitty 127-pound kicker running down there and bouncing off their blockers like a pinball, but he stayed on his feet and brought the sucker down, and they ended up getting a field goal there the next play. So that saved us 4 points and off the scoreboard, and we ended up winning 20-17. So you're an old kangaroo. Surely you took math.
I have taken math before, yes.
Yeah, that's a game-winning touchdown, yeah. Saving tackle.
Yeah, that's in a three-point game. Four points makes a lot of difference.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, and that was one of those, at the time, I didn't notice immediately that it was Kristoff because there were a couple guys. But then you see him get up, and you don't see many special teamers, specifically special teamers like that, put in the kind of effort that Kristoff does. I've seen him mm-hmm. make at least two kickoff.
It's usually not good when he's making tackles, but when he's had to, he's done a good job.
And then let's talk about defensive line. Specifically the defensive line. 9 sacks. Pierre Leonard had 3. Deontay Haywood had 1.5. Mike Anoha had 1. Josh Reynolds had 1. Elijah Earls, half a sack. And Dede Fletcher, 1 sack. So out of those 9 sacks on the night, 8 came from the defensive line. There were 13 tackles for loss, and it looks like 12 of them, or 14 tackles for loss, and 12 of them came from the defensive line. Mm-hmm. You don't see – defensive line always has a huge impact on tackle for loss numbers, but it's usually – making a hole for a linebacker to make a big play or something like that. You don't see interior linemen like Pierre make that big of a push every game. What was the difference there in that game? Was it just talent, or was it scheme, or a little bit of both?
Just, you know, it's 11 guys playing really well. You know, those all stats are defensive line stats. But if the guys are running wide open, they're not getting home. And so, you know, we felt like we could get home on a few things. Our defensive staff did a nice job. Coach Power called a great game. Again, we didn't play very well on third down that first half, but made the adjustments we needed to at halftime and really turned the heat up on them. And the secondary did a great job, you know, covering those guys. And when there's nowhere to throw the ball and we're bringing 5, 6, 7 guys, you know, it's we're going to get home in a hurry. And they were able to. And I think, you know, that aided the stats to set a school record, I believe.
Yep, school record.
Maybe the best defensive performance of the season, NCAA football Division II this year for rush defense. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's about 69 negative rushing yards. It's the fewest yards given up on the ground by a D2 team this year. Sets a school record, and it's only 8 yards off of the all-time Lone Star Conference record dating back to the 30s.
Yeah, if you take their all their 3 running backs, I think combined rush for 0 yards.
Correct. 8 carries for 0.
Their longest run of the day was 3 yards. So that's pretty good job by our defense, you know, putting some fires out. And we completely dominated the line of scrimmage, but average field position. You know, I think our offense on the game had the ball right there at midfield or within a yard or two is what it averaged out. And for them to have 400 yards of offense says something. They were moving the ball. We weren't finishing down in the red zone. So what was it ended up being, the 49-yard line?
Yeah, the visitor 48. Third quarter, we averaged starting in their territory.
Yes. So you're right there at midfield every day or every drive. You're not going to have a lot of yards. So to have 400 yards offense and you're starting every, you know, series at midfield, that shows you we moved the ball. We just didn't finish. And we were third in the country in red zone offense going into that game, and I think they kept us out. You know, we got down there in the red zone 7 times and only scored 4 of those times or 3. So it wasn't a good night in terms of finishing on offense, and we got to we got to get that fixed as coaches and get those guys ready to play at a higher level.
Another guy I want to talk about in a little bit of that next man up mentality. He made his first tackle, and I was like, okay, I don't remember him. Made his third tackle, and I was like, all right, he's having a heck of a night. Then he winds up with 11 tackles. Darius Williams had three tackles on the season coming into the night and wound up with 11 in one night. Whose spot did he step into? And talk a little bit about the kid who is stepping up into that spot.
He only had three tackles up until then?
He had two against WT and one against Lock Haven.
He was trying to play the whole season with his eyes closed, see how many tackles he could make. And I guess he finally opened them. I don't know. But no, it was his first start. We had some injuries, and you know, we had seven starters that we left at home on the trip, and it showed up at times. But D. Will really stepped up and did a tremendous job in his first collegiate start, and I think you'll see more from him again, just a redshirt freshman. So we're really excited to have him on our team and what he brings to the Lions and to our defense. So good night for him, and you'll see him more in the future.
You've been a part of some offensive shootouts in the Lone Star Conference. You're part of one of the more legendary offensive shootouts in Division II history. But that minus 69 rushing yards, that's not you don't see minus rushing yards happen very often in this game, especially not by that much. Mm-hmm. Have you been part of a game with that lopsided of a discrepancy in one stat like that before?
You know, we have. You know, we've been fortunate enough to be on the winning side of things quite a bit through our time, and I think this is whatever it is, year number 23 or 4 in the Lone Star Conference, and been a part of some really good programs and good wins. And a lot of times when you're winning, you know, people are having to throw the ball and trying to play catch up. And if you've got a dominant front like we've had in the past, you know, that sets you up for some pretty good stats in terms of rushing, because number one, they're not running the ball much. Number two, they're throwing it a lot because they're behind. And that gives you a lot of opportunities for sacks, which negates any positive rushing yards they've had. So I don't know. You know, it happens, you know, once a year or so that you'll end up with negative rushing yards. I do believe 69 is the most I've been a part of. But there's been some really good performances by teams in the past and defenses in the past. But that one was pretty special Saturday night.
Moving along to the regional rankings that came out this afternoon, no change from 1 through 10 in our region. Everybody stayed the same, even though Mines took a loss to Dixie State. They stayed at number 5 because they're number 4, rather, because their first loss of the year. Pueblo at 5, Minnesota State Mankato at number 1, Tarleton at 2, and Duluth at number 3. So another top-heavy year in this league as one of those two-loss teams. Talking about that fourth quarter of the end of the season, how big is this game against Angelo State?
Well, it's everything, and we knew it would be, and that's kind of why we broke it down. It's, you know, let's be honest, we didn't go out there and with the right frame of mind, you know, there in the game Saturday night, and that's on us as coaches. But we tried to break it down where, hey, let's win one quarter at a time to get to a position where we can win and get in the playoffs, because it's tough trips out there to Silver City, New Mexico, and Permian Basin. Those are tough trips. You know, we got in it 6 a.m. Sunday morning, you know. So, but now we've got done what we need to get done. That's win the first three quarters. Now we're in the fourth quarter. All eyes, all focus on Angelo State now. You know, that's one of our goals, is to play in the postseason. And we win on Saturday, we're in the postseason. And so everything's before us. It hadn't been a perfect year. You know, there's been some ups and some downs and some challenges and things we've had to overcome. But I'm proud of our team. I'm proud of our coaches to be in the position we are. We're in a position where, you know, maybe, I don't know, 28 to 35 teams in the country are. Everybody else is done. You know, they're mm-hmm. playing their last game for pride. And we don't like playing for pride around here. We like playing for the playoffs and championships. And so this year is no different. So we're going to have a great week of preparation and go out there and play a really, you know, good and hot Angelo State team. And so we'll need a great turnout for senior night or senior day. And hopefully we can find a way to win.
You led into my next question. Senior day coming up about half an hour before kickoff. We'll honor our 18 seniors that we've got on the roster. They've got 41 wins and only 9 losses to their credit. One more win, they tie the best 4 years, most wins in 4 year span with last year's national championship team. Talk about some of the guys in the senior group. And this is you've got one senior who was in that original mm-hmm. Signing
Malik
class.
Ellis, uh-huh.
But this is the first senior class that's got a bulk of guys who are not part of that original signing class.
Right. No, it's a good group and a good mix with, you know, offense, defense, and special teams. And, you know, I think Christoph Martinez, you can't, you know, talk about these seniors without talking about him first, an all-time leading scorer. And, in school history, all-time leading field goals, chasing down the record there for we didn't do very well with our protection Saturday night, really cost us. But, you know, he's got a shot if we can play a week or two in the playoffs that he'll break the all-time LSC record. So, tremendous kid, already has his degree, 4.0 student. You know, defensively, you've got some special kids, captains, you know, Brock Sadoff, Garrett Blueball,
Chris Smith.
I mean, guys have just done a lot for the program. Danny Huckabee, I'm sure I'm missing a few. Mike Anoha and Deontay Haywood have done a really good job up front. Reggie Kincaid, dual sport guy, track and football, All-American in track, and maybe end up being an All-American in football as a kick returner. He's third in the country right now in kickoff return. So
if really somebody does his job, he should be an All-American.
Yes, there you go. Offensively, got some tremendous players that have done a really good job. You know, up front, three really good old linemen. But, you know, Malik Ellis, multi-year starter, part of the 13 class. Jordan Smith, multi-year starter. Abdi Shama is coming out early, as is Garrett Blueball, actually. Both of them are technically juniors on the field, but they've done so well academically. They're going to med school, and, you know.
Hard to argue with that.
Hard to argue with that. So I need those guys to get through med school so they can keep me alive and heart ticking here in a few years.
You've been known to pull a hamstring or two during practice.
Yeah, I need all kinds of medical attention, and I'm not even up in advanced years yet. But, no, Marquise Wimberly, a lot of great plays and done some really, really good things for us, and expect him to have a big impact when he gets back. And Vincent Hobbs and Ovia Revu has done a great job. He's a six-year senior.
Had 195 yards the other night.
Career high. He's peaking at the right time in his six-year career. And Chase Pemberton, backup quarterback from Willis Point. Just, you know, a lot of high school guys, a lot of guys have been with this program. You cut them open, they bleed blue and gold, and have done a lot for the program on the field, but more so off. But it would be fun to send them out, you know, senior day, you know, tying the record for that'd be three straight years. We've sent the senior class out as all-time winningest class in school history. So that's something to be sure proud of, and hopefully we can do that and get in the playoffs and you know, take it one game at a time and see what happens.
Something that you started here last year, or maybe year before, on Friday night, the night before senior night. Talk a little bit about what we'll be doing then.
Yeah, we've got our senior dinner, and everybody's family comes in. The Sodexo does a great job there and puts out a really nice meal for them, and their families and coaches are all there. And we get to stand up and, you know, it's kind of almost like a senior roast. We get to have some fun and tease them and maybe bring up a few stories their parents or family hadn't heard about and wish them well. So it's a neat evening and something we look forward to. And it's bittersweet, you know, losing some really good ones. But, you know, that's part of life, and you get excited to go coach the next class, the next group coming through. But it'll be a fun Friday night and hopefully a fun weekend against Angelo State.
When you talk about losing those seniors, hopefully we don't have to lose them for a few more weeks. We'll find out at 4 o'clock on Sunday. We'll be in the club in the student center for the selection show for football. The volleyball selection show is also that night at 9 o'clock. So just go ahead and make plans to have dinner somewhere in Commerce. Come watch, find out where football's going in the playoffs. Go eat dinner, and then come back and find out where volleyball's going in the playoffs. That should be a heck of a day on Sunday.
Luigi's is always a good spot.
Luigi's is a very good spot, as well as Dos Laredos and a number of our Lions Sports Properties partners. Just throwing that out there.
Bingo.
So anything else before we go into this last home game? It's kind of hard to believe. Like, the season feels like it's moved kind of quick.
Yeah, it has. And you know, we're going to need a great turnout. I hope everybody shows up. Angelo State's got a really good team. They've won four out of their last five. They just made a coaching change. That's my old alma mater. It's always fun to compete against him. They got a brand new head coach. They've named their defense coordinator as their permanent replacement there. So I know those guys will be fired up and you know, have a little pep in their step, I'm sure, and trying to get to seven wins and get in the bowl game. So they got a lot to play for, as do we. And so it's supposed to be great weather, which is shocking.
I know.
But, you know, knock on wood. But it should be a great weather, great turnout. I think tailgate's got a lot going on. There's a lot of those places have been sold, so it should be a good crowd and a good turnout and a fun Saturday to come out and spend with Lion football and send these seniors out right.
All right. Well, Coach Carthel, we look forward to talking to you after we find out our postseason destination here next Monday night. Kickoff 4 o'clock at Ernest Hawkins Field at Memorial Stadium on Saturday. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to have a surprise campus guest to talk a little bit about last weekend and this weekend in Lion Athletics. We'll be back real quick on Lion Door.
This show and others like it from KETR.org are made possible by generous contributions from listeners just like you. Donate today at KETR.org.
All right, we're back here on the final segment of Lions Roar with our special guest, Athletics Director Tim McMurray. Very unexpected that we bring the AD on the air on a show about athletics. You and I were both in Waco the other night. The women's basketball team scored 61 points on Baylor. We won't say how many points Baylor scored because we get to spin the information.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about the first leg of what turned into a multi-city, multi-stop, multi-wild road trip for both you and I.
Yeah, I think you're a little smarter than I am because I left Waco a little bit later on Friday morning, and I sat south of Fort Worth. I moved 2.5 miles in 2.5 hours.
See, I didn't get on I-35 at all on Friday. I was smarter than that.
So that was a good move for you. But it was a lot of fun. We, as you said, had a chance to watch women's basketball, and there's certainly signs and symptoms of progress and success in that program. And the other thing about not just playing Baylor, but Jason Burton with you know, some senior turnover and just natural roster attrition, to add 11 new faces and to take the court against the preseason number four team in the country. And after watching them, they might be a little low.
Yeah, that was crazy.
So they're pretty strong, and so really pleased with where they're headed. And they'll certainly get a chance with three big in-region games this weekend at Lubbock Christian to see what they're made of and test their mettle. And the thing I like about playing a game like that to open the year, especially for a women's basketball program, is they're not going to go into an intimidating environment again.
No.
Right? Because even at Baylor, I would say at least 3,000 fans there for an exhibition.
On a Thursday night with plenty of other things going on
with
campus,
a lot of things
too.
Going on campus. They were kicking off their billion-dollar university capital campaign that night. And so it was a pretty electric atmosphere for a game that both teams are going to end 0-0. Happy about that. Then on Saturday morning, got a chance to cheer on our cross-country team. I'm glad you gave them a little publicity there in the first segment, and proud of that group. Got to watch volleyball. It was actually my first trip into the box. I've been to Canyon.
I've never been there. That's a great little
many, many times, gym. And had never had a chance to go into the box. And great atmosphere there. Fans are right on top of you. Thankfully, per capita, our fans were louder than theirs on Saturday because our volleyball team gave our fans a reason to be loud. So very, very excited about where volleyball's headed, playing their best volleyball. Had a chance to have the team over for dinner at our house last night and told that group, really proud. They're playing their best volleyball of the season heading into the conference tournament. That's very gratifying. And then Saturday night, the 3.5 hours south to Odessa.
Did that too?
I know we went the same way that way, and that was a pretty smooth drive down through Lubbock. And
I'm not sure I turned the wheel once.
Yeah, and really excited because, yeah, 20-17, we didn't get very much on style points, but when you're 8-2, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And as Coach Carthel said after the game, champions find a way to win ugly games, and we did. And I certainly still think the best football for this 2018 team is ahead of it, so I hope we get to see that play out over the next several weeks.
Having been in a road trip with you before, you do spend a lot of time on the telephone, just in your job and your everyday life, but there is a very specific phone call that you will be on at, if I'm remembering this correctly, 7 a.m. on Sunday morning. That's an extension of a number of other calls. Tell us a little bit about what that's all about.
One exciting thing this year, and having been on the softball regional committee the last 2 years and was asked to switch over to football this year, started a 3-year term on our NCAA football regional committee. And so what that means is there's a football coach and an athletic director from the Lone Star, the Northern Sun, which is the Minnesota schools as we know them, and the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference, which is the Colorado and Utah schools primarily, and then one representative from the GNAC, the Great Northwest Athletic Conference, and that's the AD from Azusa. So pretty collaborative group. You know, obviously it's a unique situation because the Colorado Mines AD is on it, the Colorado Pueblo coach John Riston is on it, the Minnesota Duluth head coach is on it, and the Azusa Pacific AD is on it. So everybody, while we all have our day jobs and our emotional and personal interests, you have to check the box because we actually have a self-policing. I can't go in there and say, hey, we beat Permian Basin this week. We're 8-2. We deserve to be that six seed. I can say A&M Commerce had a close game this weekend, you know, and I can take questions about why. Why was it a 3-point game? Why was it this? Why was it that? You can ask you can answer clarifying questions about your team, but you can't advocate for them.
Yeah.
So in our conference, it's myself and Darren Wilkinson, the head coach at A&M Kingsville. So where Darren comes in is he can speak freely about Midwestern, Tarleton, and Commerce because he played them all, but he's, you know, relatively objective when speaking about each of those three. And so there's a lot of dynamics on this call. While data and the numbers don't lie about it, we're measuring strength of schedules. You know, and the Northern Sun is what you call a closed conference, so they only play each other. But Mankato and Duluth haven't played each other this year.
And won't.
And won't. And so there's a lot of debate there. Is Tarleton being 2-0 against other teams in the top 10, being us and Midwestern, is that better than Minnesota State or Minnesota Duluth? Because they haven't played anybody in the top 10 because their conference isn't strong. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those dynamics get sorted out, and we have to be off the phone by 8:30 on Sunday morning for the national committee to seed the final bracket. So we're starting bright and early at 7 a.m., which I'm fine with that, but I feel bad for my friend Gary Pine because QuickMass tells me that's 5 a.m. in
For
LA.
Those of you who don't know Gary, he lives in Southern California.
Yes, and he'll be getting up at 4:45 a.m. to get on the phone. So
to talk about data and numbers.
A lot of work. Coach Riston has sent us each of us a Starbucks card and ordered donuts for us, so really appreciate him doing that. But a lot of work to do Sunday morning after our football team does the heavy lifting. And then I plan on volleyball just cruising through the conference tournament this weekend, so there will be no doubt about their top one or two regional ranking.
Going into the postseason, you and I both traveled to a lot of games in the regular season. How fluid and flexible do you have to be come second week of November in terms of somebody wants to ask you, hey, where are you going to be next weekend? And what's your answer?
Yeah, it's my fun answer is I won't be sitting home like many ADs in our conference have to do. So I don't take that for granted for a single moment because I love the fact that Stephenville, at some point this week, I'll race back for football senior day, Sunday, long day of preparation and getting ready, and then leave somewhere Wednesday or Thursday with volleyball, and then probably somewhere Thursday or Friday to go meet football somewhere. So that's all good. Those are all good logistical challenges to have because it means you're on an airplane, you're in a car, but you're supporting one of our teams, and volleyball and football both are at unprecedented success levels in this school's history. So that's a small price to pay is having to set alarms and book tickets and rebook tickets and transfer. And frankly, we're kind of used to having Thanksgiving plans thrown a wrench in that. So I'm okay with that too, because it means our student-athletes are continuing to compete for championships. And like our president today said, Dr. Rudin came and visited our executive team, and when we're talking about national championships mattering just as much as the student-athlete experience, maybe we've got something pretty good going here.
All right. Well, hopefully you and I are on the road
a lot. Quite a bit.
In the next few weeks. I mean, we've still got the beginning of basketball season. That's why our coaches aren't here. They're on the road. Yep. One's at practice for the biggest weekend to open the season. They've got, I think, 6 games in the next 11 days or something like that. We're not going to see a lot of our desks, but we're going to get a lot of things done.
Yep, that's why we have laptops. And I want to give you and Marcus and June a lot of credit. You know, in this profession, especially this time of year, for you could have technically had a weekend off or, you know, maybe just gone with football, and for you guys to pack up on Thursday and not come back till the wee hours Sunday morning just speaks to the best-in-class support that our administration gives our student-athletes, and it's noticed and appreciated.
Well, I want to give them credit because they were up on the video stand Wednesday night in Rockwall in the rain, too.
That's
then
true.
Went home, dried everything out. There was still water on the sound system when we unpacked it today.
Yeah, my 4-48 is actually wrong. We did 5-72.
Well, and we went to Eastern New Mexico for volleyball, too.
Yeah.
So we We put in
some
miles.
You did five. Yeah, you did five.
We,
so
we put in some miles, that's for
sure.
That's
awesome.
If you count men's and women's cross country separately, and the one set of volleyball we caught at WT, we had six contests in 3 days, seven contests in
that's
four.
That's true. Yeah, that's
so,
true. We like it.
Yeah, we like it. And a lot of people who saw us thought are probably right that we are a little bit insane. But
we can take a nap in the spring sometime.
I wouldn't. There's the mandatory 7 day Christmas break. I will take that.
That's right.
I'll take that. That's good. So, all right. Well, thanks for hopping on with us. Thanks to everybody watching at home, and thanks to everybody listening. This is Josh Mank signing off for Lions Roar. Go Lions.